This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
So my presentation, as Suzelle indicated, it really builds on the presentation that she's just given about responding to forced marriage. And it's going to be a whistle-stop tour through a scoping study that Refuge received funding for, as Suzelle mentioned, from the programme fund. And it really explores forced marriage experience of women from Middle Eastern and Northeast African communities. Because again, as Suzelle's presentation demonstrated, we know a bit less about the experience of women from those communities. And because this scoping study involved listening to women accessing refugee services, and we're actually aimed to develop survivor-led recommendations for service provision, it also nicely introduces the presentations from Jane and Davina, which come after me. So I'm using the 2008 stats, which we had when this research was completed, and which showed a similar pattern to the pattern that Suzelle has outlined, that the vast majority of cases reported the forced marriage unit are from the Indian subcontinent, but also that around 12% of cases involve women from countries outside of this region, so East Asia, the Middle East, Europe and Africa. And another need for research in this area was that we know there's a growing body of knowledge about the experience of Asian women being forced into forced marriage, but less is known about the experience of women from other communities. You know, is their experience similar to that of South Asian women, and are their support needs the same? So in order to try and answer these questions, the research sample focused on the women whose families originated from the countries which are listed on this slide and which are showed pictorially by the map. And the overarching objectives I've already touched upon. So it was to explore the experiences of forced marriage from women in the UK whose family originate from the Middle East and Northeast Africa, but also to develop survivor-led recommendations on how Refuge and, of course, other providers can improve service provision from women from these regions. So in terms of the methodology then, we agreed that the study would consist of a research review of existing knowledge, interviews with at least 10 service users from the Middle East and Northeast Africa, and interviews with at least 6 caseworkers about their experience of supporting women from these backgrounds. The literature review itself involved a systematic research of academic databases and also relevant government and voluntary organisation websites. But we did have to expand that search via a wider internet research just because we were coming up with limited findings. So in terms of identifying women to interview for the research, we searched Refugees Remit system, which is our electronic casework system, and Jane will talk more about that later, and found that 24 forced marriage cases were within Refugees services during the research period, and 7 of the women who'd experienced forced marriage actually fell into the research sample. However, because we wanted to talk to at least 10 women, we also approached other agencies working in the field. So they included the Asian Women's Resource Centre and ASEANA. It's important to say that although all the women agreed to take part in the research, the vast majority did actually ask for their caseworker to speak on their behalf. So in addition, a mixture of Refuge and ASEANA staff who run culturally specific services agreed to be interviewed. And in order to maximise the learning for the study, we did actually also ask the caseworkers who presented the cases of women they'd supported about their more general experience of supporting women from these backgrounds. So to the findings. Well, to begin with, and as I've already touched upon, the literature review showed that although there seems to be evidence or acknowledgement that forced marriage happens across communities, there really was an overwhelming lack of research into women's lived experience of forced marriage outside of the South Asian community. In relation to the interviews then, the research sample was made up of women from Turkey, Iraq, Somalia, Sudan and Eritrea. And the cases that we learned about demonstrated the following patterns. As I keep pressing my button to move on to. Here we go. The women were all aged between 17 and 31, which is slightly sort of higher than the age limit that or the age range that Suzelle outlined. Some women were born in the UK, whilst others had come to the UK as children or as adults. Some women escaped the threat of forced marriage, and some escaped an actual forced marriage. That the women were being forced to marry immediate and distant cousins, men from the family's country of origin, and men deemed to be suitable. And also that the women were being forced to marry men generally who were considerably older than themselves. So in terms of motives and triggers then, you can see, again, this really reflects the presentation that Suzelle gave. It was about controlling unwanted behaviour, preventing what were seen as unsuitable relationships, attempting to strengthen family links, achieving financial gain, protecting family honour, women who were seen to transgress perceived cultural ideals, and women coming to their end of their education. So all the women who reported being forced into marriage had been forced into marriage by immediate and extended family members, again, as Suzelle indicated. But again, it was important to note here that women also spoke about family members, and this included male siblings and cousins and also boyfriends of the women being forced into marriage, that they really played supportive roles in order to, obviously not supporting the forced marriage, but to stop them being abused. And in terms of the duress that women told us about in terms of their forced marriage experience, it was very much about physical abuse, threats to kill, emotional abuse, again, as Suzelle mentioned, lots of threats to send women back home if they didn't agree to the marriage, false imprisonment, the monitoring of movements, and also a substantial element of financial abuse, including interference with education and their access to money. So in terms of avoidance strategies then, a lot of women tried to prolong their education. Some ran away, some pretended to conform and go along with the plans for a period of time until it came to a point where they realised they couldn't do that any longer. They tried to retain ownership of passport, which links into Suzelle's point about travel. They tried to avoid the perpetrators of abuse as much as they could, and they also spent the time exploring the sort of outside support that was available to them so that they would be ready if they decided to escape. You know, they knew where they'd go or how they'd access support. In terms of accessing support, then again, it was very much a range of agencies who women turned to, including the Forced Marriage Unit. But of course, women did tell us that there were lots of barriers to accessing this support, not to bring shame on the family, not wanting to upset family and get them into trouble, desire to keep a low profile due to immigration issues within the family, being scared that the external agencies would actually make things worse, and this was really reinforced by the messages they were receiving from their family, a mistrust of outside agencies based on past experience, limited proficiency in English, and, you know, the sad fact that a lot of women are still unaware that support is available. In terms of support needs, then, there was obviously emotional support. A lot of women reported social isolation. There was a need for specialist services and peer support. A need around safety planning, financial support, immigration issues, accommodation, and in some cases substance misuse, where women were using substances as coping strategies. So in terms of additional themes identified by caseworkers, having seen the findings that I've already outlined, it probably won't come as a surprise to you that all the caseworkers that we interviewed actually saw many parallels between the forced marriage experience of these women and women they had supported previously from South Asia. It also won't surprise you, having gone through these slides again, that the support needs of women were broadly similar to those of South Asian service users. However, these groups of women appeared less likely to define their experience as forced marriage, and that really was because the messages that they had been receiving about forced marriage suggested that it didn't happen in their community, that actually it was a South Asian issue, so obviously they couldn't be experiencing it. And this meant that many of the women were unaware that the support was available. And it was also interesting to see that a lot of the women did actually seek out sort of Asian community groups first before accessing specialist support from their own community groups. There was also lots of confusion still about what forced marriage is, since a lot of women did not perceive that their experiences fit sort of neatly into the definition of forced marriage. And caseworkers also flagged instances of forced marriage where women had agreed to an arranged marriage, but the person organising the match hadn't actually told them that their husband had a mental illness or was addicted to drugs, so that they didn't go into the marriage with the full information about what the marriage entailed. And another strong theme that the caseworkers reported was women being forced to stay married, so entering into marriages and then finding it really difficult to get out of them. So in conclusion then, a scoping study found that there was a lack of research into forced marriage across communities, a lack of recognition of forced marriage across communities, both by professionals and women themselves, a lack of understanding about what forced marriage is, and a lack of knowledge about the support that was available. Based on these findings, a number of recommendations were made in the final research report. I haven't listed them all here, but just to highlight the key points. Firstly, and quite clearly, there is a need for further research into the experience of forced marriage for women outside of the South Asian community. Secondly, all awareness-raising materials and guidelines on this issue really do need to reflect that forced marriage is experienced across communities. And this could be achieved, you know, quite simply by ensuring that case study examples and guidance or pictures on leaflets actually reflect women from a range of different backgrounds, and that, of course, this literature is translated into different languages. In terms of shaping service provision, the key themes which emerged included emotional and psychological support as a priority, and ensuring wherever possible that women have access to culturally specific and specialist services. And this was especially important in order to help mitigate the socialisation that I raised earlier. And finally, what was really clear is that more prevention work is needed so that girls and women can identify what forced marriage is, whatever their background, and know where to reach out for help. As I said, this really was a whistle-stop tour of the research, but you can pick up a copy of the report, which is with my colleagues in the foyer area. Thank you.